This morning, our speaker is Reverend Doug Tarusso. Doug is the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tullahoma. He earned his master's degree in divinity from Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. Doug is a retired Air Force officer, a dog lover, a gamer, and he studies Buddhism and meditation. Today, Doug will speak on the topic, I've Got Nothing. Let's welcome Doug.
Yeah, a little editorial comment. Unless it's important to your congregation, please drop off the Reverend. I've never liked that title because it's derived from revere, and you should not be revering me or any other religious leader, because most of us are just good scam artists who get paid for doing fun stuff anyway. I actually earn a living by reading books that I would want to read anyway and thinking about things I'd want to think about anyway, and then people give me money to do it. And so why would that entitle me to a title like revere me? I appreciate the fact that you use it, but we don't use it at our church, unless it's important to you, please, my name is Doug, just call me Doug. And my job is I'm the minister of the UU Church of Tullahoma. This particular sermon does tie in very nicely with the book we heard a little bit ago. And it wasn't coordinated, but it's just a perfect fit because the poor bear is wandering around going, where's my hat? Life is not worth living without my hat. I've lost my... What will I do if I never find my hat? And this ties in to this notion of trying to hang on to things, being the source of a lot of pain and suffering. In fact, I dare say many of the world's problems can be traced back to this desire to both acquire and then retain or maintain things. Fear is often a manifestation of these desires. So is aggression and oppression. Somebody wants something, and they can abuse others to get it. They can steal from them. They can take advantage of them. They can lie to them so they get that thing that they desire so much. Someone then wants to protect something, perhaps the something that they acquired by abusing or stealing or lying to someone else. And so now they've got it. They've got that nice red pointy hat like the bear had. And now I have to protect it. So I'm going to build a fortress. I'm going to arm myself. I'm going to post guards. I'm going to buy a fancy security system. And I will live in fear and worry, wondering if my thing might be taken away from me. Greed, gluttony, avarice, selfishness, all I think ultimately manifest in fear. So one of the things we'll be focusing on today is the fear that comes out of these desires to hang on to things. For instance, I'm afraid I can't maintain my lifestyle. I'm afraid I might lose the necessary income, or I might lose something else that entitles me to live the way I live. And I worry about it. I'm afraid that someone's going to rob my home, or I'm afraid that someone's going to assault me, so I won't go anywhere without a weapon. I'm afraid of germs, diseases, and dying. I'm afraid of incompetent doctors and flawed medications, so I won't go to a hospital when I'm sick. I'm afraid of the diagnosis that might entail, the treatment, the end of my life. I'm afraid of what comes after death. I'm afraid of no longer existing. And fear is that underlying message out of all of this. And with these fears come a million abuses. You have quack physicians, unscrupulous religious leaders, corrupt politicians, and a whole host of hucksters who will prey on your fear, who will gain financial advantage from your fear. They will take your money, your health, and in some cases, your life. They can abuse you sexually and mentally. And as happens all too often, people who are afraid will willingly give up their rights, their dignity, their money, their own volition, and totally surrender to someone else in hopes that everything will be all right and I can get rid of that fear. Perhaps one of the silliest things I heard during the endless election saga that we went through over the year and a half were these lines. And even though they come from one candidate, all the candidates say it in one way or another. This was just particularly easy to remember because it was spoken at about a fourth grade level. When I'm elected, you'll be so happy. We'll build up our military and you'll be so happy. And this is almost an exact quote. I watched it. We'll build the wall and you'll be happy. All these things and you'll be happy. Now, this is nothing new. Politicians have done this as long as there's been politicians. And some people say it in a more sophisticated way, but most politicians do say this. Elect me and you'll be happy. Except that's not how it works out, because really, if you're somebody who's struggling, who's lost a job, is trying to figure out how to make the monthly payments, and you have someone in your family who's sick and you can't pay the medical bills, you really don't care how big the military is or whether there's a wall between you and Mexico. You really don't. And that's not going to help you. But people say it and people buy into it because we all want to be happy. But just stop and think about it. Politicians aren't going to make you happy. The government's not going to make you happy. It may be able to help you out in a way or another way. It may give you the freedom, for instance, that we have to meet here today as what most people would consider a collection of heretics and unbelievers. But we have this freedom, and that freedom does come because of things like the military and our government that gives us these rights. So I'm not naive, I'm not blind to these things, but when you're dealing with a personal happiness issue, it's not going to be fixed by who you vote for in most cases. But what they do say to you in order to get your vote, to get you to fall in line, is, trust me, you need not fear. All will be well. I can fix things. But in reality, we've seen that little changes year after year. So I wanted to share some famous insights into this fear and to try to overcome this fear. I mean, I think it's obvious. I think most of us would agree that fear is a great motivator. That's why most politics usually uses fear as a great way to motivate voters. And we certainly saw that this year. But you can overcome fear. And that's what I want to focus on now. First of all, this notion of trying to hang on to things or grasping. Various religions handle it in different ways, and was mentioned in the intro to me, I'm practicing Zen Buddhist, and one of the things that we learn about is that when you want to grasp and hang on to things, that's going to be the source of your anguish or your suffering or your misery or your unhappiness. Rather than trying to grasp and keep things exactly as they are when you like them the way they are, you have to understand that all these things, even the things that bring you joy and contentment and bliss, whatever word you want to use, they are impermanent. They will change. They will fade. And the sadness comes when we refuse to acknowledge that. We've had a couple of examples of this in our life. We heard at least one story during Joys and Concerns about someone who had lost a dog and another one who had a seizure. And I can relate all too well to this. We lost a dog this year. She was old. She had a happy life. But if you want to understand the transitory nature of life, of the impermanence of things, have a pet. Raise it from a puppy, as we did with Shotzi. Watch her go through life cycle to old age, and then watch her in her declining years. Because most pets are going to have a far shorter lifespan than us, we get to see this, and we get to experience the joy and the sadness as we lose a pet that we love. And some of you have experienced this with family members. We're experiencing it. We have not lost any of our parents yet, Jancy and I, but Jancy's mother has Alzheimer's, and she's been going through this for over 3 years now. And her mother, as Jancy knew her, is gone. Her mother doesn't even recognize her most of the time when she sees her now. And we've got to watch what happens, the nature of her mother disappearing. The body's still there, but the mind is gone. The memories are gone. And we see this on a daily basis. And it's a constant reminder that things do change. And you have a choice when you're faced with something like this. And people make different decisions based on this, you know, almost forceful head-on collision with something so unpleasant as the loss of someone or something that you love very much. I've seen people who can't let go of a pet who's old, infirm, suffering, and they just desperately want to extend the life regardless of cost, regardless of the suffering of the animal, because they can't bear to be without their beloved pet. I get that. I understand that. But sometimes letting go is best both for you and for that, you know, animal or for that person. But first you have to come to an acceptance that all good things do pass. And any religion that doesn't deal with that honestly and openly is doing a disservice to its adherents. And you will find many different perspectives around all the different religions. I grew up in one that said, every one of us will live forever. We may live in heaven forever, we may live in hell forever, but we will not end. And that was the first great lie, in my humble opinion. Now, I don't know what happens when you die. So I call it a lie because you can't speak with certainty about something you don't know. Perhaps we do live forever. I don't know. I make no claim. But to say with absolute certainty, you all will live forever, and to preach that every Sunday, that's a belief. That's not knowledge. And frankly, I think you do your people a disservice if you can't speak honestly about what you do know and what you don't know. And when you can say, you may cease to exist. There may be nothing after death. And you have to be honest about that day by day, not only about your own existence, but about the existence of all those around you that you care about. This is vital. Honesty is vital. I am not one of those who buys into the benevolent lie. Let's all pretend so we can all be happy. Happiness doesn't come out of pretense. Happiness comes out of an honest facing of what we know, and then dealing with it as best we can and supporting each other in that. That's a religion to me that's worthwhile. And because I can practice that within Unitarian Universalism, I am very grateful. And I can also understand that different people have different perspectives about that. As long as we're honest about what we know and what we hope, then it's very easy to get along. So we have the hucksters, we have the religious hucksters, we have the medical hucksters, we have all sorts of people who will take advantage of you because we have this fear of non-existence. We have this fear of dying, we have this fear of illness. But we also have the knowledge that truth somehow seeps out, despite all the hucksterism. You know, antibiotics have been widely used for many, many years because antibiotics work. And we see that repeated over and over. And when you go into the hospital nowadays, you don't see jars of leeches because bloodletting, except, and someone will always come up with some weird off-the-wall thing where it actually helps. Okay, maybe one in a billion times leeches would help you rather than do nothing. But most of the time, all the bloodletting and the leeches and everything else, over time, we figured out that isn't really helpful. And we go with the things that do help. And so truth will leak out. And I think that's happened in our society where more and more people are becoming less and less religious in the sense of believing what an institution tells them, and more demanding evidence, more and more saying, I can think for myself. You know, the big phrase is spiritual but not religious. That's very common. Or people will fall into the category of nuns, which means not nuns like N-U-N-S's, but N-O-N-E, nothing. I don't have a religion, but I do have a spiritual side. I just don't buy into the doctrines of one group and say, yep, I'll follow that. I think that's an example of truth trying to break through. And we are very fortunate to be in a country where we have those freedoms. So I've always appreciated the teachings of Buddhism that tell me to look at things as impermanent and face that reality. But I think Jesus had some things to say, regardless of what you think about Christianity. He had some good things to transcend religious boundaries, depending on how you interpret it. So I'm going to give you Doug's interpretation. Jesus said, don't accumulate treasures for yourself here on earth. Accumulate treasures in heaven. Now, that is usually interpreted to mean I'm going to not worry about stuff on this world, because once I die and go to heaven, I'm going to have all this great stuff, all the treasures I'm going to accumulate if I do the right things now. But I think there's a better way to look at that, and probably a more accurate way. And this ties into another saying of Jesus. What shall it profit you if you gain the whole world and lose your soul? And again, some people think losing your soul means you're going to hell, eternal damnation. But these two phrases can be looked at another way. What if losing your soul refers to losing your personal integrity, losing the respect of others, losing your decency, selling out? And what if laying up treasures in heaven means you are building up a reputation of integrity and honesty and trustworthiness amongst others, and those treasures are incalculable, and you will throw those away as soon as you become a thief or a con artist or a liar or whatever phrase you want to use. If wealth or power must be accumulated by lying, cheating, stealing, murder, causing suffering, what good is it really to have wealth or power? And obviously, lots of people think it's a worthwhile endeavor. You can watch people fighting each other tooth and nail for political power or to gain money. And it seems like anything goes. Anything certainly went over this last year. The lies, the cheating, and this is a broad stroke for all the politicians, by the way. If you were a Bernie Sanders fan, as I was, what the DNC did and the way they tried to line up questions to trip him up, like asking him about his belief in God because he was Jewish, you know, no one has clean hands in this. I know a lot of people are angsty about the future, and there may be well good concern for that. But the process that got us here today was people who sold out, who did not lay up their treasures in heaven, did not worry about integrity and honesty and decency, and went the other route that we got to get this power, whatever the cost. And then WikiLeaks came along, and the window shades were open, and everyone got to look in and see how this was all going on. And we have chaos, and people said, burn it all down. And here we are. So we'll see what happens. I have little doubt, and it wasn't meant to be a political sermon, but there's a good lesson for politicians in this. And I think most religions teach something like this. Don't destroy yourself. Don't lose your self-respect. Don't lose your decency in the pursuit of power or money or anything. I shared in another sermon the simple summation of Master Dogen, who was the founder of my particular branch of Zen Buddhism. And the summation of everything in his writings, and he wrote a great deal, was simple. Don't be a jerk. I think I shared that with you a few months ago. Don't be a jerk. In fact, this is such common sense. such a reasonable proposition that I thought probably every religion, even the wackiest ones, probably have something like this in their basic teachings. And so I did something that's once more going to put us on the map as a first for Murfreesboro, as I said for Tullahoma. I said this a few months ago when I said we probably did the first ever exposition of the Heart Sutra from the pulpit in a church in Murfreesboro. Well, today, we're going to be going through the basic teachings of the Church of Satan. Because, yeah, I went there. Why not? The national spy agencies that are caught me browsing through the Church of Satan's website, they have all the goods on me now. But I have some good news for you. There may be a lot of things to fear in this world, but the Church of Satan isn't one of them. Now, they did not, much to my surprise, actually have something similar to these teachings of Jesus about, you know, being just a basically decent person. But they did have some good quotes, and we need a little comic relief right now because it's been a kind of a down couple of weeks and a sort of grim talking about impermanence and people being greedy and selling their souls out. So what did the Church of Satan say about selling my soul? Well, they have a question and answer section on their website. By the way, the Church of Satan has about as much actual solidity and reality as, say, the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. So don't get too worked up about it. But first question is, how do I sell my soul? And the answer is, Satanists do not believe in God, Satan, heaven, or hell. There are no souls and nobody to buy them. If you want something out of life, get off your lazy butt and work for it. Second question, if I join the Church of Satan, will I become rich and famous and have sex with anyone I desire? Answer, no. Third question, what can the Church of Satan do for me? Answer, nothing you can't do for yourself. There is no supernatural magic to change your life. We offer a realistic, pragmatic, materialistic philosophy which challenges you to work hard towards attaining your goals while living within the laws of the place where you live. If you're not up for that, Satanism is not for you. So I don't think you have to worry about them sacrificing your children or your pets or anything else. Now, I'm not going to be joining the Church of Satan because despite the fact that I found these particular views amusing and somewhat refreshing, they're also very self-centered. In fact, rather than being an atheist, they've come up with a new term, an I-theist, because it's all about I, or me. It means that each person becomes their own god, the center of their own universe. And once again, you're back at the original problem, grasping. Now you're the god of your own universe, and so you make your own happiness, and then you have to grasp it. Hang on to it and don't let it go. In this case, grasping for what makes you happy, with little understanding that this is actually the source of the problem. So even the Church of Satan has missed this, at least, basic truth, in my humble opinion. So it's been an interesting journey. We've talked about the source of our fears and suffering, the corruption of power, and a brief look at the Church of Satan. Just another average Sunday here in Murfreesboro, the UU Fellowship. But as we bring this sermon in for a landing, please consider carefully the things that cause you fear, that cause you anguish, that cause you to be upset and worry and cause you to suffer. Would looking at life in a different way help you with some of the anxiety or angst that you might be going through? You know, are you seeking to hang on to things that cannot possibly be hung on to? Do you acknowledge the temporary nature of your life and the things you hold dear? Are you seeking the world at the cost of your soul? Where are you laying up your treasures? I'll close with an example of this, of joy and yet the temporary nature of the joy. Those of you who are my Facebook friends saw I posted a photo a couple days ago, or maybe it was yesterday. I think it was yesterday morning. It was really cold, and as I like to do, I get in my easy chair get my coffee, get something to read, and then the dogs all jump up on me. And I had like five dogs draped all over me, and I said, oh, I got a blanket of dogs because it's a cold morning. Now, this is a huge source of joy to me. I find it entertaining because they just wait for me to do this. This is the morning ritual. And they all follow me in the kitchen, and they look at me expectantly, and I get my coffee, and then I walk into the other room. And heaven forbid I should stop and eat cereal first before I go sit in the easy chair, because they just stare at me the whole time. Go and sit in the chair, and then they all line up, and they all have their spots. They have always the same spots. And then we all kick back and relax. And I'm petting the dogs. And at that point, I know that statistically, I will outlive all of them. My oldest one probably is not much longer for this world, a year or two at most. She's 13 now. And I pet them. I love them. The joy on their faces, the excitement for each morning. If you have a dog that's like that, that just acts like each day is a whole new realm of excitement to go explore, you understand how that can lift your heart. But as I do this, I also know, because I buried many dogs, I will outlive most of them. They are not permanent. As much as I love them, they are not permanent. And I say this about my dogs because they have a shorter lifespan. But this is also true about my wife, about my children, about my parents, about anyone who matters in my life. And if you are in a moment of absolute joy, you know, everything is perfect. It's a gorgeous day. The weather is magnificent. You've had a magnificent meal. You're with your best friends or family or whatever, and you're having a wonderful time. You know it's not going to last like that. You can't freeze that moment. This is the teaching of impermanence. Rather than being sad that it's going to end, be ecstatic that you are in that moment. And be ecstatic in each moment that you can be ecstatic in. Not all moments are joyful. But when you have the joyful moments, stop and pay close attention each time and be thankful and joyful for that. Not dreading the fact that it's going to end, but wow, I have this right here, right now. And that's the thought I want to leave you with. As you wrestle with the things that cause you fear or anxiety, everything's going to pass. The bad will pass, the good will pass. Be joyful for those great moments that you have each and every day, and I hope you have many of them. Thank you for coming out and sharing with us today of your valuable time. And those of you who stick around, we have plenty to talk about the next hour.